High Vibe Nation is live. Welcome to the High Vibe Nation, where we have set out to raise the vibration of every human being on the planet. Your hosts on this journey are Sherry Gideons and Pamela Aubrey. So let's join them now in their current interview with a high-vibing individual.
Hello and welcome to the High Vibe Nation, a revolution of love. It's time to raise your vibration and live your highest life now. I'm your host, Sherry Gideons, and this is my co-host, Pamela Aubrey.
Welcome, everyone. We are so happy to have you with us here tonight, and we're here with a very special guest, Paul Trudell. He is a pain in home and lifestyle entrepreneur, creative director of Casa Consult and Design. He's an interior stylist and visual storyteller, and we're very excited to have him here to share some of his story with us.
Hey.
Welcome to the show, Paul.
Sorry, it's not dewy anymore. It just looks too moisturized, but I promise it was dewy at one point. It's just really hot here. Yeah. How are you guys?
We're awesome.
Great. And very happy to have you. And as you know, we'd love to talk on this show about what it means to be high vibe. So tell us, what does it mean to you to be high vibe?
For me, I think being high vibe is really about being open, being vulnerable, and being able to live in that overwhelming feeling and emotion, whatever it is. I think to me, that's a really high vibe.
That's awesome.
Love that.
Yes, I do too. So start us out with, who was Paul as a little boy? Tell us about the Paul as a little boy and any fond memories about him.
that is literally my first question on my podcast.
No.
And I always am like, I hope no one ever asks me this.
what you asked for, you just didn't get it.
I grew up in Washington State, in central Washington. So very desert. It was a migrant farm worker's town. So my mom is Mexican, my dad's white. And I only know my mom's family. She's like one of 11. And they then have some of my uncles and aunts have like 10. Eight, five kids. So there's a lot of us.
I know that.
And so that's where we grew up. It was rural and small, so small. And growing up, it felt big because my family was so large. Mm. So, you know, like we actually lived in a little home. I'm one of four, my parents. So there's six of us in a two bedroom home. And then my grandparents, one of my aunts at least, maybe another, and then their kids and in another two bedroom home next door to us. So like, it was just us the whole time. And every weekend I remember growing up as like a barbecue or a quinceañera or something was going on. So it was just like filled. I mean, and like just, it filled the backyards. So they didn't put up a fence. It was just like, everyone was there. So yeah, it felt big to me until I moved away. I think overall I felt very lucky that it was a positive, right? Like I felt positive about growing up. Mm-hmm. But I think it's so funny. I was literally just writing about this last night. I grew up with that family and it felt so positive, but I realized I was different very early on. Mm. And I don't think different in the sense of like, I felt very different inside my head more than anything. Mm-hmm. So I just felt always attuned to, what are people not saying to me? Mm-hmm. That gesture or maybe that weird thing that they did with their face meant something different than what the word was that came out of their mouth. I just was super in my head all the time. And so I think that made me like a little vulnerable right inside. And so that's the last thing any little boy wants to be, is vulnerable. So I just tried very hard to not then have any emotion, right? Like, so just to like tough it through the whole time. And so that actually turned into, when I was little, I was sick every day, like sick from my stomach, thrown up. And it was anxiety and I didn't know. And so I didn't stop that until I was like in my 20s. Mm-hmm. So it was like a rare week if I did not get sick that day. So yeah, I thought that was normal. I thought that other people probably did the same thing and we just didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I think where things shifted for me is I already felt in my head really analytical, and my parents ended up putting me to asking me and shipping me off sort of to a private school in like the bigger city next to where we lived. Mm-hmm. My two older brothers both went to public school and, you know, didn't go down the best path. It's crazy to think because it is Washington State, but there was a lot of gangs and a lot of stuff like that. So that they, my parents, I think their thought was, if we just make you go away to the big city, was called Yakima, maybe you'll not get involved in any of this. And I think that idea of like, whoa, I feel so different, also then made me realize like, I need to be very different than the rest of my family. Like if they go down that road, then I do the opposite. Mm-hmm. So in high school, like I didn't drink and I did do drugs. Like I did nothing. I tried to be, I know there's a scientific term for this, but it's like the excellent kid. Like I had to be excellent at everything, because in my head, that's what made people love you. Mm. So just everything got construed. Man, we went deep really fast. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Hopefully you took the journey with me, but like in my head, crazy thoughts all the time, and then turned into, people are going to notice I'm different. I need to be really great at everything. And that's how I associated love. And not because my family did not love me, because they did, but you know, my mom was one of, I think, two originally that went to college out of 11, you know, like, so they were working all the time. My parents were both in the medical field and working constantly. So it was just my two older brothers, me and my younger brother, and my grandma, who took care of all of us. And yeah, I just like, I wanted some kind of attention, probably, right? Love, really love. I wanted love. And when you ship me off to a private school, I'll tell you, it's a weird thing. My private school, it was small also. So I graduated from a class of, I think, 35. Like, it was a tiny school. And so that small of a school, they bust in, and I say bust, but it was actually just a van. Mm. Like six kids from the lower valley, which is where we were from, to go to the school. And I learned quickly that those kids were the like scholarship kids. And we just also all happened to be Hispanic in like a very white school. And it's just like those kind of things. I was so hyper-focused on how people thought of me that it made me hyper-focused then to like how I stuck out everywhere. So I paid attention to that stuff, I think, way too much. So that was me as a kid. Sounds so happy and pleasant, but it was just a lot of me in my head, really. Like nothing was honestly like happening to me. It was just me processing things in not the best way, right? Like I didn't know the best way to go about it. Mm-hmm. And then obviously if you don't figure that out, it does not help you going into adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, so at what point did you kind of start to make the shift, and how did that happen? You know, where you finally came to a point where you realized there were some changes you had to make.
So I went to college in San Francisco the day after. I mean, like I graduated and I was out, like flew away the day after I graduated. And I thought this is my chance. In high school is where I started realizing I'm different, but maybe I'm also gay. And I was in a private school, Catholic school. They were amazing. I want to say that they were honestly amazing. It was taught by the Jesuit brothers, and they would always tell us like, these are guidelines on how to be great, but people are so different. They cannot be ruled. I mean, they were just amazing people at that school. So I knew it would be okay, but there was one gay kid in our school that was very out, like nail polish, glitter, Britney Spears came on. He had a routine. It just, that I think scared me, because I saw what happened to him. Like, he got so attacked and things. And so I wanted to stay far away from that. So I just was like, sports, girlfriend, really good at school. And it's tough. So when I think of my childhood, the reason I think of fondly like my family and really being young is because it's very hard for me to think, I think from like third grade on, what was really happening versus what was just going on in my head, because I'm like pretending to be someone that I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And so then you grow up a lot of that time pretending to not even be yourself. Mm-hmm. It's hard to then really find out who you are, because I don't, it took me a while. So when I was 19, I read The Secret. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. And I was in college, and what had happened is I went to college. I thought I was going to be gay. Did not happen. I immediately got connected with a roommate who I loved, but he was the extreme version of a straight guy, like a new girl every night, like just intense about it. And so that wasn't going to be the safest place for me to do that. So I did a double life. I worked in the city. So I took a ferry into the city in the evenings to work like at Abercrombie or Guess. And then I try and be gay after work, and then get driven back to school and try and go to school and then not be gay there. It became such an intense circle. And honestly, what happened is I found myself in a person's house that I didn't really know. And like I said, I'd never really done drugs or drank or anything. And he gave me something to smoke I assumed was weed, and it was not. And that scared me so much that I actually, the next morning, called my parents and asked them to book a flight because I couldn't stay there anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that was like the turning point for me to say, like, I don't want to go down that path of like, I don't know. It just felt like very crazy to me that I was like in a stranger's home doing drugs. I didn't even know what they were. And yet just didn't even seem like myself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I didn't even really know who myself was. So I thought like that idea of like, this doesn't seem like myself was big enough to me to feel like I got to go. Mm-hmm.
And how old were you during that time?
So that was, I mean, that was like 19, like so young.
So you were still pretty young. And it sounds like you were really, really starting to open up to, you know, really ask those questions. Who am I? Who am I really? Because it sounds like too, you were trying to balance out those years of feeling anxiety. Because I know what anxiety is, because I had it growing up as a child as well, because I struggled so much with trying to meet up to what, you know, in my head too, what I thought the world wanted of me in order to be loved and accepted. So, you know, everything you're saying, I can relate with at a very deep heart level. And so I can imagine at 19 years old, here you are, and, you know, you're trying to be somebody during the day, you're trying to be gay at night, and then you're still trying to ask those questions of yourself, you know, who am I really? Why am I here? You know, how do I discover love? And and so, you know, where did you go, you know, from there and really coming into tune with, you know, who you are? Because, I mean, I know you're a conscious leader in the LGBT community. And I know that you're very, you live very prideful in who you are now, and you're very much in love. And so share a little bit of that with us.
Yeah. So essentially, like I went home to my family, recouped, at least mentally, and then moved to Seattle. And so I was in Seattle literally up until May of last year. So that's where I've lived pretty much my whole life. And that love of like, I want love. I think I don't remember the exact moment, but I realized it was connection. I didn't know connection. Mm. So the friends I made, it was never deep because they never knew all of me and I had to hide so much. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't real connection. And that idea, which is why I did become sort of an equality advocate or accepting mental health, all of that, is because I think the idea of like, I have to do something for love is to me one of the scariest things to do and to believe in. And when I moved to Seattle, that hadn't gone away. Just because I realized that didn't feel good, it still was there. Mm-hmm. And so my whole relationship of like, I'm going to be gay. When I went to Seattle, I did. I actually told my parents before I even moved. So everyone knew. And I thought this was going to be it. I've seen the movies and the TV shows, and I'm going to find a big group of friends, and it's going to be like fun dancing, and that's what's going to happen. And it turns out to like, if I was so scared and nervous of the, or not nervous, but I'm scared that I couldn't find connection and I had to do something for it. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, just personal experience, going into like the gay world as a gay man, mm-hmm. you don't want to be doing anything for anybody for love. And that was my introduction, is like, this, how do I make this person like me? What do I have to do for that? Like, that whole mentality was me for my early 20s, honestly. Mm-hmm. Even though I felt like I was getting better and better at like who I was and what I wanted, I'm gonna be open, I still couldn't lose that part of like, for some reason, love and that connection aspect. Mm-hmm. It still didn't feel like something I could grasp. So over time, I realized I am excellent at things. I'm great at work, and I'm going to focus on that. And so doing that helped me find myself more and more. It realized like, I don't need to be great for other people. I just feel good being great for myself.
Right.
And I excelled really quickly, and I've been really blessed and lucky. Like any job I've ever had, it was quick to management and quick to, you know, like new titles. And in 2014, I started my own company. That's when I became an entrepreneur as a real estate agent. And that, just like everything else, it really took off. We sold 10 houses in our first 10 weeks. And, you know, it was like rookie of the year in like 3 months. And it just blew up. And so that's where I've been sort of the last 5 years. So like, even though I'm a conscious leader and I do feel secure, it is this new journey for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's still fresh. Mm-hmm. But I think like what I've learned is if I can pinpoint those key words that I need to look for, it was a lot easier for me to then address them, right? Like I could say love, but it's actually connection. How do I find connection without having to give something for it? Mm-hmm. And now I can consciously be aware and actually make different decisions because of it. And it really, because it started with The Secret, even though it took me a long time to get here, like that secret, something about that really clicked. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm sure like everybody, and then like Oprah, and you know, like just there's people that just, I think, move you without you knowing it. Mm-hmm. Really helped me decide to like, I should just be everything that I am instead of hide pieces of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think a lot of it too, you know, because I believe what you're seeking is always seeking you. And so much of it is surrender in ourselves. It's really about surrendering in the present moment. You know, we hear this all the time, be present, be in the moment, but we don't truly grasp the significance of that power that is available to us in every moment when we surrender. Because, I mean, really, you've said it so many times, you know, you're seeking connection, but on a grander, greater scheme, it really is all about love. And it's about finding it in here first. And it seems your journey, as you've gone through these different experiences, that part of your soul has always been guiding you and leading you into a deeper, deeper relationship with you.
Yeah. And it's true. Like, it's funny to think that you could only have a surface level relationship with yourself, mm-hmm. but that is like, I feel like my life up until truly like this past year, it was very surface level. No matter how deep I thought I was, it had not gone there because I wouldn't face things. You know, like I had never talked about doing what I needed to do because I thought that's what guys wanted me to do. Or, you know, I was like, sexually assaulted. I never said that before out loud. Like mm-hmm. those are the things that I think you have to say and own, because then it's not like it gives it power. It almost like takes the power of like that away from it mm-hmm. so that you can then just move on and talk about it. And I think that's the biggest key I learned this past year in particular, of like, if I can say a truth, I actually can make a real connection that is not based on me giving anything or that person giving me something. It really is just a connection that we made because I told a truth. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big thing for me. It's not like I lied all the time, but I just wasn't living in a truth all the time.
I really love that. And I think that there are so many people who have walked that road of feeling like they can't be themselves, you know, no matter what their circumstances are. I mean, I just feel like pretty much everyone can relate in some way to that. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you now encourage people and teach people to do that?
Totally. So this past year was a life of change for me. So I sold my real estate company, just the brand in itself, and moved me and my family to San Diego and thought, what am I going to do? Big moves, but I didn't really have a plan. I had a design company as well that I just sort of rebranded and took with me. So I was doing design, and then a friend of mine sort of introduced me to the world of like coaching and consulting. And so that's how it started, was just business, like everything business, coaching and consulting, a lot of real estate teams, home designers, mortgage lenders, like service industry. And what I realized in that, which is the same that I realized in real estate, is that I was just a counselor. Like I rarely was like a salesperson. I mean, I'm most of the time just spent myself like sitting in a living room talking to a husband or wife or husband, wife about their relationship and why this house is going to help that or hurt that. So I just like those service industry moments, and design even worse, I'll tell you. Like, yeah. Having a couple trying to decide on wallpaper is a couple's session that needs to happen. Right. So I realized that was happening. And then I thought, that's what I love. I love those moments. Like, it was way more than selling a home or designing. It was connecting with people on that level and helping them work through something. Like, I always talk about life being like a puzzle. And some people can just see a puzzle and say, like, I can see all these pieces that need to go. And that's how I feel when I meet people and I see like they're struggling with something. And especially if it's about themselves, helping someone feel like, let's just own it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I was nervous when I started it because I'm new, right? Like, I haven't done this for 50 years or 20 years or 10. But I think that also is good for the student, if you call them that, because I'm going through it with them, right? And I'm not lying about anything. It's authentic. It's like, I just went through this. Let me see if it can help you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I love that
a lot. And I know that you know, from just the conversation that you and I have had, that you really love helping people to design their lives, and that it actually spreads broader than just in the home, that you're going out there really opening people up through, you know, finding deeper truths in finding success in themselves and whatever that is. And so how did that journey of that happen for you?
Thank you so much for keeping those key talking points on track, because I forgot all of them. Essentially, like I knew, I believed since I was little that things happen, right, for a reason. My grandma's very spiritual, and she sort of had a gift. And the older I got, the more I was exploring that side of things. And so, like, I was like, okay, I think I got something. And so I knew that there was a way that all these different components would connect. And so for me, just like what you said, it was about designing the life you deserve and finding a home. Mm-hmm. And home being like the key word. So with real estate, it was about, you know, actually finding the physical home. With design, it's about turning the house into the home. And that then led me to this coaching, consulting, and my podcast, which is how we then find a way to be at home within ourselves. And so that is, like, to me, the full circle. I also think it's like the whole person, right? Like, it's the outside, it's the inside, it's the people, and then it's you. So it just felt very connected to me. And that's my focus now, is just how can I help people be at home with who they are and design the life that they can have. And maybe that's a little bit of business skills, because I can help people automate something to make things easier for themselves, give them a little bit more work-life balance. But most of it really is just like, how do we work on you? Even you hire me for business, 9 times out of 10, I'm really just working on you. And I like that. I like that. Like, it's not, it's a really personal thing. I like being impactful on a personal one-on-one level. It means more to me that way.
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful. And I think, you know, I've noticed this a lot with younger people, and this relates to your story a lot, you know, where they're kind of going through that period in their life where they're trying to figure out who they are, but they're also trying to put their lives together, you know, and to figure out how they kind of fit into this world. So what are some of the things, you know, some of the tools that you use to do that? And can you share some of those with us for the audience?
Totally. So I just experienced one in the previous talk that we were in, and it was asking yourself the same question over and over and over again, and seeing what answers come up. Mm. And I do that constantly, and it's not to be annoying, but it really is because you realize that you start getting more truthful. Mm. So what I found is that obviously coaching is going to be very personal, and not every coach is meant for a person. I like to point things out. And I tell this with a design client, a real estate client, and a coaching client. We have to become best friends. Mm-hmm. And you have to feel so comfortable with me that it will be okay for me to say, you're lying to me now. Just like I want you to be able to tell me, I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a two-way street always. So what I do, at least with any client I work with, is really try and say, in the moment, that I don't think is a truth. Mm-hmm. Tell me why. And how do we explore that? If you want that new job, why? To me, it's always like a why. I want to find the reason behind it. And that the big why, right? Like, everyone's like, what's your big why? That big why, if I am not moved to tears, or if I'm not laughing so much that it hurts, that is not enough of a big why. Like, it has to physically impact me for that big why, I think, to really be true. Because everybody's big why is good, but until you find that, it can't propel you. And I think you get to have multiple. Like, for real estate, my big why was, I know if I did real estate, I could adopt a child, because it's expensive to adopt a child. And so I needed that. And that propelled me. And it was authentic and it was real. And I knew that, like, every time I didn't want to go meet that client, I don't get that baby. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's a moving thing for me. And I think if people can connect that to everyday things, which is what I try and do, even if that seems crazy to other people that I'm making it so dramatic that, oh God, this is moving me just to go to work today. Mm-hmm. I personally think it makes our life more fulfilling, and it really makes it more impactful. It allows us to be so much more successful than you could ever thought. I never, ever in a million years would ever think that I could be, like, you know, 34 when I sold 34 and, like, selling a company, like, just doesn't even seem like possible from where I come from. So I just, like, that's my goal, is like, what's your why? How does it move us? Ask these questions to yourself every single day.
Mm-hmm. You know, I hear in that conversation, because I know in dealing with coaching clients, how a lot of clients will get in their comfort zone. And it's trying to shift them out of that comfort zone. A lot of times what'll come up is fear will come up. On top of fear, it will be the ego, or they won't just want to let go and just be open and honest and share where they're at right now, so that I can help them break free of wherever that roadblock is that they're stuck in. Because, you know, it's all emotion, it's all attached emotion. And so I hear you mention focusing on what's important. How do you get your clients, when they're in that, you know, that constriction and that attachment, to focus on what's important?
So I apply the same thing that I've done with, like, business. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, let's plan for the end, right? And then work our way backwards. Mm-hmm. So before we get into any coaching, anything, I spend at least a day, if not more, where we just are going to talk about this big why, because I want to be so secure in it. Because if I know it, every time you try and stray away from it, I can then step in and say, this is not the path we're supposed to go on. Yeah. We need to get back to this. And I think even just that little bit of, like, extra work you do in the beginning to, like, what's really motivating them. I also do a lot of like personality studies and mindset. So I try and gauge, like, how is this person going to possibly react to some things, prep myself for it. Mm-hmm. So that if that does happen, I'm ready to go in and, like, what's the best way to move them with that? But it is a lot of pre-work, right? Like, it's just like a job. Like, I do a lot of research and stuff up ahead so that I can go in and help them, because I do think, like, while this is a personal journey, it's that anxiety, it's that wanting to do amazing things. I have a client and I will be more stressed than you, I promise, every single day. Because I take that on. Like, if you can't make it, it feels like I can't make it. So I know that I want to make this. So I know that I'm going to show up and push and push and push. I also think, and I hope this doesn't sound too confusing, but I do think, like, you also have to know when to say no. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't working. Mm-hmm. Like, I like would tell salespeople all the time, you have to be able to say no to a client. No, I don't need the sale, because that energy that they're going to bring might not be right for me. And I want to make room for the energy that's supposed to be here.
Yeah. It's
exactly. It's not a good fit. And sometimes that happens after being with each other for a little while. Mm-hmm. But if that were, and it's happened to me. And if that happens, I tell them, I'm still in your corner. I will be here until you find someone. Mm-hmm. I'll help you find this person. Mm-hmm. But I will never ditch someone. I'll never do that. But I will, at least even for my sanity, mm-hmm. say, this is not a good fit. And have that uncomfortable conversation, because there are people that will be say, and I was one of them, I just am going to be sitting in this sadness or this whatever. It feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else is out there, so I'm going to sit in it. So it's easy to then not want to move, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, while I do think everyone can move, sometimes I just want to give people the respect to say, you can do that. Mm-hmm. I just can't help you then while you're doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they get stuck in wanting to be in the story, and that's going to drag you down too, and it's not going to serve them either.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's not even a selfish act. I view it as a selfless act. If I have multiple clients I'm working with, that one person will affect how then I impact anyone else that I'm going to work with. Mm-hmm. And so I just think, like, helping people to a point, you have to be honest with yourself too and know when you can't help, so that you can then find help for them. Mm-hmm. And I ask them to do that too. So I'm probably over communicative. Like, it's a lot of texting and, like, nonstop with people that I work with. But I think, like, maybe that's the way then that we connect so deeply, that they are willing to be maybe a little bit more vulnerable than even I would have expected. It's happened twice that I've had to, like, tell a client, like, I don't think this is working. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, everybody else, even the ones that really were difficult, I knew that they weren't ready to give up, so I could still be in it with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, for people who are kind of new to the idea of coaching, sometimes working with a coach can be a little intimidating. Mm-hmm. And so I think it might be good, even if you spoke to, you know, the value, some of the results that you've seen, the value that people can get from coaching, and, you know, what that can look like in someone's life.
Yeah. So I'm always upfront and say, I am that person that says, I can do this on my own. I don't need a coach. Like, I didn't even have a coach until this past year. So, like, I get that. I really do. I also think, though, for me, it was that word. Something about that word did something, you know? Like, when I heard consultant, it wasn't as scary for me. Coach felt like I'm just not good at it. That's actually what it felt like. It felt like, I'm not good, so you have to come and coach me how to do this. Mm-hmm. Where, like, a consultant felt like they're just going to give me some tips to make me a little bit better. Like, I don't know, and that's just me in my head. But, like, so I do both. Consulting, coaching, just sort of whatever fits for anybody. And I think for me, it's about connection. That's going to make someone feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. I think that also will determine if this coach is right for you, and for the coach or consultant, if that client is right for you. Mm-hmm. So for me, like, I am not a person that says, let's talk on the phone for 10, 20 minutes, sign up. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we are meeting in person for an hour and we have to go to coffee. Are we really friends? Because if we're not, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. And that's how we decide, like, do you believe in this? Because I can say personal experience, like, I'm thinking of just right now, like, I have a real estate agent who I was coaching. It expanded way beyond real estate. Mm-hmm. You know, it turned into, like, how do we help him with his girlfriend? And how does that girlfriend's business get started? And, like, you know, it expanded. And I love that. Like, I don't want to put a limit on, like, where we should help each other. but it was an honest conversation. He was for sure not a let me do coaching. But I can tell you, when I met him, he had sold three homes in the last 2 years. And I think I was with him in the first 3 months, he had 4 or 5 sales.
Wow.
You know, he had set up relationships with organizations to sort of give back to charity. He was invigorated. And I think that's even the key, is like, I'm not even gonna take credit for all that. Sometimes you just need someone that's gonna be there that says like, I connect with you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to support you. That gives you enough confidence to say like, I'm just going to go out and kill it today.
Right.
Like So I think like it is sometimes just that, like, I know that I can listen and I know that I'm not intimidating. So like people feel comfortable to tell me things. And I love that because I want to talk to them and connect. So for me, it's like anyone who's nervous about it, I say, meet with someone. Mm-hmm. And if that coach won't meet with you, then call someone else.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So true. So true. Well, one of the things I was reading about, Paul, about your own podcast was, you know, you call it In Your Mind. And you mentioned in the process, in revealing that the idea of home is hardest found within ourselves, but mastering the skills to truly feel at home with who you are just might be the key to unlock everything we've all been searching for. Tell us what that's
means. Beautiful. I don't even remember writing that.
My friend. Oh my God. I was like, wow, that spoke to my heart. Yeah. And I'm like, I got to ask him, you know, what did that mean to him?
I think like, even like as cliche as it might sound, like growing up hiding who you are affected me in way more ways than I could honestly ever explain. And being able to find a way to feel at home, because when you grow up hiding who you are, that means you're not at home with who you are, right? Like you are very ashamed. And it's not even, there's no guilt. That is shame. I'm ashamed of that. Mm-hmm. So knowing that and then being able to transform and say, I feel so comfortable with who I am, even the bad, like, and that's what you have to be able to do, is say like, yeah, these are bad things too. Like bad things happen. I'm okay with it. Hey, maybe I'm annoying. Okay, cool. But everyone else thinks it's okay. Like whatever it is, you have to just own it. And when I can own it, I realized it made everything else not off limits. And it made everything else not too out of reach. Because I was owning who I was. And I felt like at that point, what can't you do if you're being who you are? It sounds like, yeah, whatever. But I mean, when you're there, it really does feel that way. Like, it's like you can be exactly who you are. And that's why I said like the key to the secret, because I think all of us, like you had talked about before, have a way of coming out. I think every person is coming out with something. Every person is searching for home in some way. Mm-hmm. And if we just said, hey, let me just look at myself, let me be 100% okay with myself, you'd be surprised how unblurred all of these things seem. And you can just, it's like clarity. Like that's easy to step that way. That's easy to step that way. I can actually get there. Really clear. Because I'm okay with who I am and I'm not concerned anymore. And that does not mean that we do not have bad days, because I have bad days. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that I can say, I have a bad day today. And I can also have a good day tomorrow. Like I'm gonna own everything when it happens.
Mm-hmm. I really love that you say that. It doesn't always mean, you know, 100% we're gonna love it ourselves like crazy every day.
No. No one's getting that like insta-perfect life for me. I promise. You want to follow me, it will not be. It's going to be messy and mistakes. And yeah, that's just what life
is. And I think that's part of what loving yourself is, though. And I think you agree that it's, like you said, you know, realizing that you're not perfect, that we all have flaws, and really like embracing those flaws. And then what that turns into, what that produces in our lives.
Yeah. And it's like, it's the mind. That's like, I keep thinking of like the mind, and I love the heart and I love love, but the mind is the one thing that can just change everything for you. Right. It's so scary. It's so powerful. If your mind is off, everything can seem not possible. So it's like that mental health thing of like, and you were just saying the things that are different about us, like if we can be okay with those things, all of a sudden, like that mind, that talk, because I have a lot of it, feels a lot less or a lot quieter. It just feels quieter. It doesn't go away. It just feels quieter to me. And I can choose to not listen today, or at least choose to put something else on that's a little bit louder.
Yeah.
Like, so that I do not have to hear that today. And I think that's the key. Like, it's why I think there shouldn't be a stigma with mental health. We all have something. I'm going to be okay with it. And I just try and turn it down, the volume down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting too, because like when I woke up 23 years ago and realized that we create our own reality, that the power that we give behind the emotion of what we think, you know, is what causes the environment to show up for us, whatever environment that is. And it seems so real when we're going through it. But then when the power is given back to us and we realize, wait a minute, you mean I have a choice, I have volition? And then you begin to really build, like I know for myself, I began to build this deep desire to want to be this person that, you know, influenced other people to live from that power. And it didn't happen overnight. It just like what we've all been talking about, it took me taking baby steps. And it was from those baby steps that I learned new ways to talk to myself better. And then it was from talking to that self better when I was in the moment and I was faced with, you know, pain or suffering or, you know, an argument that might have shown up, that I would be willing to do what was necessary to shift where I was at, you know, whatever vibration I was at. And it wasn't always easy, but what you're talking about is so true. And it's in that willingness to come forward and share that part of yourself with others that other people find that it's okay to share that part with others. They don't have to hide.
Yeah, it takes the power away from it, right? Like we're creating this world in our head.
Mm-hmm.
We're giving that then power because we're saying that's the only reality. When the fact is, if we say what's real to us, who we are, we let it go, we don't hide it, all of a sudden that version doesn't seem as powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's like being in a dark room and not knowing where the light switch is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can panic. But you can also just like feel around until you hit the light switch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that like shift. I don't know. It's like that to me makes so much sense. Like I'm just going to feel around then and see what happens. And that to me is like, that's what truth is. I'm just going to lay it out there and see who takes it or who doesn't. And how does this one resonate and how does the other not? And go from there. Cause that's all I can do. It's my truth. It's no one else's. Like I'm not there to prove something, but I hope, and that's what I love and exactly what you said, that somehow be doing that does impact someone in a positive way. Because then I know it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes you feel more powerful too. Like I feel better daily knowing, fine, if you cannot have the strength today, I'll have the strength and just tell you the story.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe tomorrow you can have the strength. Because you just need to see that. You need to see representation. You need to see someone who's done something similar so that you know that it is possible.
That's so great. And I think, you know, just understanding that it's okay. You know, I mean, I think a lot of us have been raised in environments where we feel like we're supposed to be able to do it on our own, or, you know, I should already have this figured out, or, you know, I shouldn't have to need help with this. And just to realize that that's not why we're here. You know, that's not how this whole deal works. And that the reason we're all going through these things is so that we can be here together doing it together. And it's, so I love that.
That whole, what you said is like, yes, 100%. That's the truth. Like it's, I feel like Sherry and I talked about this, but it's that journey from like I to we.
Yes.
That is what all of us are on. We have to go from I to we. So I, us, them, and then we. We need to get there. And for some reason, it's so hard and it's difficult, but you have to get there. And when you get there, you do realize I do everything better when I can ask for help. I do everything better when I can collaborate with other people who have done something. I get to new heights by doing it together. So I think, yes, it's hard to get through it. Sometimes it's even the opposite, where I'm so scared of, like, what if I do good? Is that too much responsibility, right? Like, I get it. I get all of those things. But at the same time, if you just focus on it's connection, love, doing this together, it really doesn't seem as difficult, in the sense of there's going to be someone there that could help you. Mm-hmm. And so you have to get past that, for sure. You have to get past saying, I'm okay with help. Mm-hmm. And I do promise, just so people do know, because we're talking a lot about personal, and if you just do that in business, you also will succeed. Like, mm-hmm. if you're willing to just step out and say, hey, you have a great business, can you help me? Because I don't know that skill.
Yeah.
They always say yes. Right. That's literally how any of my businesses are even remotely successful, is by just letting someone else help me do something that I'm not good at. So yeah. It's like, I felt that way in business, and that's how I realized, like, I just need to live my life that way everywhere. I'm going to ask for help on everything. And what's the worst that will happen? Someone says no, there's 100 other people you could ask.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, and you know, it's so funny, because I was talking to one of our upcoming guests, and she was telling me about how a lot of people are afraid to go out and do lives. You know, in that we're in a time where there's so much that people are tapping into in themselves, and they want to go out and share this part of themselves, but they're afraid, because they're afraid of what people will think. And she says, you know, go out there and speak, go out there and share your heart, because she says, people are always watching, even if they're not commenting, even if they're not liking. And she says, we want to beat ourselves up, and we want to say, oh my God, I didn't get any likes, or I barely got any views. She says, don't even think about that, because people are always watching.
That just resonates so much. Like, I'm lately, especially, I have a podcast, and so I've been on a lot of calls with, like, podcast specialist on where we're supposed to take this podcast. Well, and they always ask, like, what was the point, right? What are you doing this for? And I always say the same thing. Like, it's really just to tell people stories. Like, no, you have to do it for money, or you have to do it for leads, or like, no, like, I'm telling you the truth. Like, this is 100%. And this is weird and crazy, but I remember hearing a story about Charlize Theron, which, weird, it's not like I'm a huge fan, but I heard a story about her. And it was how she grew up, and that I think it's her mother had to kill her father in front of her because he was so abusive.
Wow.
And just that, like, story of, like, hearing this person. And again, I'm not a huge fan. It was just a celebrity. But hearing that made me connect that person in a different way, that mm-hmm. she went through that, and then seeing her act, and then seeing how amazing and, like, she could just dive into a character. It's like, now I know why she has that story. And that to me was like a really pivotal moment of like, that's what I want to do. I want to tell other people's stories, because there's someone that will listen, even if they don't comment, even if they don't do anything. There could be someone out there that just needed to hear that today. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, I mean, I love that you said that, because it's literally the purpose. It has nothing to do with anything else other than, like, can we get enough stories out there? Mm-hmm. Can we get enough people to share who they are? Mm-hmm. So that someone else can say, that is, I think, me. Or my goal, like, dream would be someone who's like, I never want to connect with that person. Mm-hmm. Realize, oh God, I think we're similar. Mm-hmm. That is that way that we change people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's how you open someone's mind.
Mm-hmm. That's really perfect. I just feel like, you know, that's when we connect so easily to stories as humans. And I think that's one of the best ways that we can come out of our own, because I think a lot of what happens to us is we get stuck in our stories, you know, whether they're true or not, you know, we just get stuck in them. And when we hear someone else's story, then all of a sudden we connect to that, and it's like, oh, well, wait, maybe there's another possibility, like what this person experienced. And so I really love that you bring that up. And that's one of the things, you know, I actually, in one of my own shows, that's really why I started it, was because I thought, if we can share some stories and someone else, just one person, you know, hears it and it changes their life, then that's one person.
Yep.
That's all it takes, right? Like, it's one person. And with what is going on in the world right now, I just think, like, just to me, it felt so needed to just share a story. And that's why I say, like, my ultimate goal, and this is true, I want to get an email from someone that was like, I don't even care what it is. Like, I hate gay people, or I hate whatever, whatever it was. And then say, I listened to that and realized maybe we're a little bit more similar than I expected. Mm-hmm. Because it's just that. It doesn't even mean that they have to like gay people at the end or whoever. I just want them to be like, oh my God, I think that we're actually human. Not all these labels that we try and throw at each other, because that's where it's about. That's getting to the we. Like, that's my whole focus. Like, can we get to we? Because once we get to we, I just know in my heart, like, things could get easier. Mm-hmm.
Well,
for everybody.
So, you know, when you say that too, it makes me go back to the idea of so much of our thinking and our belief system is built around conditioned behavior and modeled behavior. And so, you know, it goes back to what I said in the very beginning, what you're seeking is always seeking you. So when a person in themselves is seeking to understand, or they're seeking information, you're going to show up in their moment. And they're going to hear through you what you have to say in the moment. And they're going to receive that message. It's just like a broadcasting system. They're broadcasting it from themselves. Here you show up. It's like my mentor, you know what he said? The difference between a motivational speaker and a transformational speaker. I call myself a transformational speaker. He said a motivational speaker speaks from the mind. A transformational speaker speaks from the spirit of God, the source, the power that is within them at the core of their being. They've surrendered to this greater expression of themselves, and it comes through. And man, is that freaking powerful when you think of it at that level. And I feel that from you. I feel your heart so deeply aligned with your truth. And God, how appreciative we are of you sharing it.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's a work in progress every day, but I agree. Like, it's what you said with transformational speaker. I mean, it's true. It's something that just has to be told. Mm-hmm. And that's how it feels to me. Like, this has to be told. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how else to say it, but like, our stories have to be told. They just do. Mm.
That's so beautiful. Well, so if you would share one of your favorite coaching stories with us, just a transformation that you've seen, and, you know, not obviously too personal.
I think actually it involves people and then also me. So there was I had a team, and that team, we were bringing on a new person. So it's like, I do the training, coaching for it. And this person was very different than the team. You know, our team was very, I don't want to say liberal because that's like too general. It just like the team was very like, or in our heads, I will say that too. In our heads, super liberal, super open, super accepting. And then I didn't personally bring them on. We found her. I agreed. Perfect fit. Let's bring her on. Very different. You know, we're in Seattle. I don't know if you've been to Seattle. It's very green. It's very liberal. This person's coming from like the deep South, very conservative. And there was a moment where she was in the office and she had a gun. She carried a concealed, legal, 100% legal. And something happened in that moment where I saw the team really show how not open and accepting we were. And, because immediately it was like, we cannot be in this office. That's there. It's dangerous. Like, I understand all of that. I don't hold a gun. Like, when I was young, people shot out our windows. Like, I don't want to be near a gun. But I also think I cannot expect them to understand me and my story and my differences. And this is what makes me feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. If I'm also then not willing to do that for them. Mm-hmm. So it was like, to me, it was a lot of hypocrisy in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think with things like this in particular, where it's like super a right or a left, or it's so divisive, people are scared to touch it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, oddly enough, that's the one time I feel very confident in like broaching it. So whenever it's like that kind of seriousness, I just go full force into it. And that's exactly what I did, is like brought up the team together and said, I want you to recognize that you are asking her to put something away that keeps her safe, regardless if you want to do it or not. then she should then also have the right to say, each one of you, I'm going to take away something that makes you feel comfortable and safe. That's the only way this is equal. It's not because it's a majority thinks this or not. That's not equal. Equal is everybody gets the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it didn't, I will say it wasn't a fun thought for the team or experience, but it did mean something. And I felt really good because like, that's not my beliefs, right? Like that's not exactly who I was, but I do feel very strongly like you have to give that person the respect if you expect respect. And I just, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that was the best coaching moment, but it was just what came to mind right away.
Really, really powerful. And I think that speaks a lot to circumstances and situations right now that we're finding ourselves in, where we're needing to have these kind of conversations.
100%.
Absolutely. So Paul, I know that you have an amazing relationship with your husband and you have a beautiful son. So tell us, do you believe you're now aligned with your soul's purpose and living the vision of your dreams?
For sure. Like I feel very aligned, like very aligned. I feel like living that dream. I think that I have a lot of dreams. So I'm living for sure one of them right now. And then I'm going to live another one and another one. But yeah, I feel really aligned. I will say, and I just because I have to, like, feeling aligned it's like an everyday practice. I don't know how to describe it. Like, right. Like I do feel aligned. I feel right now, 100%. But I also know being in quarantine with a 3-year-old and someone you're married to, I will say it's not been fun. Like we have not been like having parties and loving each other every moment of the day. There's a lot of breaks and quiet times in this house. So it's a constant thing, but it is there. I think like if you can focus on the end, right? Focus on the end the whole time, you'll always get there.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Love it.
Well, and you've written some books. So tell us a little bit about your books.
Oh, I'm going to be in a One Habit for Thriving Home Office. So that will come out, I believe, this month. And then I'm writing another thing for the One Habit on like entrepreneurship. And I've just done a lot of like guest bloggings, like a lot. Like I was just on Shondaland and HuffPost and talking about parenting, or I was realtor.com for like a couple months just reviewing design photos. I mean, like just fun stuff. Like I just want to do everything that I can that feels fun and aligned and impactful.
Awesome.
Love it.
So tell us about your website, where people can find you, your Instagram page and your Facebook page.
Perfect. So hopefully this is real for a little while. I'm rebranding a lot of stuff, but right now it's Casa Consultant Design as my main website. And that's where I do all the design. We're having a marketplace where there's like home furniture, decor, and then business material. So like trainings and marketing material. And that's also the business consulting. So it's like housed under one. The Data Diary is the blog that I started with my husband when we started adopting. So I promise that will start getting updated more regularly. And those are the big things. I still am licensed in Washington and have a company called Sandstone West. Sorry, I'm like, can't even think. And it is more referral based. So since I'm not in Washington, it's hard to practice. So I actually have strategic partners there and here in California now. So if people still reach out, I have people for them. But I'm trying to do now a whole personal brand. Mm-hmm. So everything will live. So it's easier to find. Honestly, that's all that's going to be. So it'll be actually like Paul Andres, which is my first and middle name. And then hopefully everything can fall under that. So it's not like go to these 5 different places to find me.
And your Instagram?
Instagram is casa.consult.design. Thank you for that. Yes.
Yep. And now your Facebook page.
Same thing. casa.consult.design.
Awesome.
I love that.
Yeah, well, we had to make sure that you had it up there on the screen.
I know, you really do with me. I promise you have to do that.
It's all good.
All right, Pam, you tell them all how they can find us.
And you can find us at thehighvibenation.com and on Facebook at The High Vibe Nation and on Instagram at The High Vibe Nation.
Awesome.
Love it.
We want to thank you again, Paul. Thank you, all of our audience and guests. We appreciate you each and every week on Mondays and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We want to thank you all for sharing out with your profiles and your audience. Until Wednesday evening at 5 o'clock p.m., have an amazing rest of the week.
Thank you guys so much.
From everybody here at the High Vibe Nation, we want to say thank you for choosing to raise your vibration. And of course, please like, share, and subscribe. If you need to find us on the web, check us out at www.thehighvibenation.com. Looking forward to seeing you on the next episode, and keep high vibing.